Good evening, everybody. So we are here today to talk about the Celts and their influence on shamanism in the world. So we're going to explore different cultures and different countries, different set of beliefs, and we're going to notice how they're going to be cutting off each other. Just like the other series, like the feminine series, we eventually learned that all the sacred feminine kind of meet with one another. In the same way, all shamanic practices across the world kind of cut each other. They might vary a little bit, but we're going to see that they all mainly started influencing each other. So I know it's been a while since we've been able to do a podcast. Those are free, so feel free to share, feel free to subscribe, and encourage us in growing our subscribers list. The reason why it took some delays before I could make new podcasts is because we published some new books. So between the publishing and the researching for these podcasts, we can only do so much at a time. But we welcome you back to our channel, and we're happy to see you here. So let's start. There's a lot of propaganda, if you will, that was spread about the Celts. The Celts were the enemy of the Romans, and they were quite feared, actually, by their reputation. So to encourage the soldiers to go to war and to fight, they had to spread rumors about who the Celts were and the reason why we should fight them in the first place. And so, like in any good war, there's good propaganda against the enemy to make them more easy to fight, if you will. So the enemy soldiers were convinced that the Celts were a war culture and they had a deep desire for blood and sacrifices. And we're going to see that that's totally not who the Celts were. The Celts were actually a thriving society that covered most of Europe. At the height of their culture, the stretch was from Ireland all the way to Turkey. Now, why are the Celts mostly associated with Ireland? It's because once the Romans started invading and also the Germanic tribes started invading Europe and fighting the Celts were either assimilated or retreated back until eventually they retreated all the way to Ireland. In the Roman history, the Romans were stopped at the Wall of Hadrian, and that's about where Scotland sits today. And so they didn't finish clearing the Isle of Scotland and England, and so they never actually made it all the way to Ireland, which is the reason why Ireland was able to preserve most of the Celtic culture. Now, the Celts had, in fact, they were described by the Romans as barbarian and terrible people, but they had their own language, their own mythology, and as well as a very particular, fine, well-developed art, that it was either through manuscripts, through paintings, through metalwork. They were very well-versed in the arts. So when you measure a society through history, one of the ways to know how advanced they were is you measure it by their art. A society that has reached a stage where they can develop art and good quality metallurgic things rather than crude weapons, it means that they were times of peace where they could develop those technologies. So they weren't always at war and they weren't always fighting. There were times of peace where they could develop this, along with poetry and music. Most of the knowledge for the Celtic tribes was passed down orally. And it's a tradition amongst shamanism that is very all around the globe. The tradition is usually passed down orally. And for some reason, the fact that the culture, the knowledge, the wisdom was passed down orally in cultures where they have writing, they consider them barbaric because they have no writing. The writing came much later. And so some works were saved and written, but most of it was just passed down orally in the very beginning at the least. However, in the case of the Celts, the quality of the oral tradition is amazing. They were people designated to learn and to pass down these actual traditions, stories, mythologies. They were trained and they dedicated their entire lives to it. So I was taken very seriously. So as where we might think that it was just from father to son kind of thing, it was not. The Celts had renowned schools through Europe. And so their teaching methods were incredibly detailed and excellent. So we will examine their culture before the influence of Romans and Christianity, because after that, it becomes a meddle of everything, a mixture of everything, and it gets confusing. So we're going to stick to the origins of the Celts. The origins, we start by studying the mythology of the five invasions, as it is described, which describes how the Irish land existed. They were constantly invaded, but there's no actual creation myth per se. They came from somewhere else. And so because of that, they brought with them their belief system from where they were to Ireland, which is why we will see that through the Druids and the Celtic culture was really influenced by all other parts of the world. And they grew into this fantastic, amazing, unique culture of their own. So what's interesting in the mythology of the invasion is that the gods and goddesses all have the same status. There's not one that is more important than another. It's also the idea that they are more human than godlike in the sense that they have jealousy, they have anger, and they're not always benevolent and loving and caring. They have very human traits about them that makes them seek revenge or get punished for their misdeeds. The only special thing that makes them god and goddesses is that they have certain abilities that the rest of the people or the humans don't seem to have, which makes them elevated to a statute of god or goddesses. However, those qualities, we will see that through the study of the Druids, these qualities were available to every human who would put their mind and dedication to doing the work to learn how to do those things. So it wasn't like a superpower, it's just a learned thing that everybody else didn't understand and therefore appeared to be magic. The story of invasion in Ireland first tells us about the granddaughter of Noah. Yes, Noah from the Bible. And so the granddaughter of Noah, named Caesar, and I'm sorry about the pronunciation. If any Irish people are listening, I'm going to massacre their names. I apologize in advance. But Caesar came to live to Ireland with 50 women and 3 men. The story goes that the 3 men had been rejected by Noah and couldn't board the ark, and Caesar decided to take them onto a ship and flee before the flood arrived, and they figured that Ireland would be a safe place to settle while the deluge take place. However, the 3 men died because they were not worthy, and so eventually 50 women alone, there was no reproduction, and they died. Now the second invasion, now we're talking about invasion, but in a way, we can call it more of a colonizing of Ireland, in a way. The second, but it's referred to in the history of as invasion, was led by Partholon. Partholon fled Greece after killing his parents, and he came with his wife and children and other people, and lived in Ireland for quite some time. However, because of his iniquity of killing his parents, he was decimated, him and his entire people. So again, Ireland, technically, sits empty. Then came Naimhead. Naimhead was translated into English, means holy or sacred place. And he was also of Greek origins. So now we have people coming from where the Hebrew had settled, and now we have people coming from Greece, right? So we're far away from Ireland here. Now, what's important is because this kind of explains some of the words being used. Druids, which is sometimes translated as men of the oak or men of nature or something similar, It also is very closely related to the word dryads in the Greek mythology, which is forest-dwelling creatures. So we'll see through the course of this shamanic series that there's always continuously finding connections between mystery schools and shamanism and how it grew and propagated itself through the entire earth. So now, after the death of Nimhed, his ancestors were fighting what is referred to as a less educated or a less well people, and they flee back to Greece. However, when they returned to Greece, they were enslaved. While they were enslaved, they decided to, they became the men of bags, as they were referred to, because they were either wearing the bags, carrying dirts as slaves, and they were covered in bags, but their name translates to men of bags. Now, while they were away, the Firbolg ruled Ireland for 37 years. However, the grandchildren of Nimhed decided to flee Greece and slavery and return to their homeland, to Ireland, and fathered the race of the Tuatha De Danann, which are now referred to in Ireland as the fairies, the fairy folks. The true name of the Tuatha De Danann, we will refer to this this podcast as Sidhe, because they're not truly fairies. In fact, if you were to see them, they look more like elves. They're tall. They're very they're muscular, but in a skinny way, and they have this royal air about them. So they're not the tiny little things with wings. They're full-size beings. So after they returned, the Tuatha De Danann, on their way back, actually had ties with Greece and also Egypt. So while their stay and while they make their way from Greece to Egypt to eventually reaching Ireland, they're bringing with them knowledge, wisdom of mystery schools from those two countries, which we will cover in this series eventually. And so they became the rulers of Ireland until, and they developed as skilled miners, skilled smiths, skilled builders, farmers, merchants. They were establishing connections worldwide. So they thrived between 800 before Jesus Christ to about 300 before Jesus Christ. The Celts continued to be influencing Europe after that, but that was their height of their culture. They eventually lost their foothold on the mainland of Europe when they lost the war to the Romans in 52 before Christ in Alesia with the surrender of Vercingetorix. So if you read Asterix, that is the Battle of Alesia, where everything was lost. So they had important sites across Europe, mainly in Spain, in France, in Italy, especially Switzerland, where they had mines of salt, and that was one of their trades, and Turkey. And their art, their metalwork, was found in sites, archaeological sites, all over these places and these countries. Several of these spots are also now located in Ireland. We'll review them when we get there. So eventually, the Tuatha De Danann, having to fight another invasion from the people, decided, because of their knowledge, to retreat in another world dimension. And that is why they still speak of the Tuatha De Danann as existing. They're just existing in a separate dimension. They continue living, just not in the third dimension. The doors to the world of the Tuatha De Danann is all over Ireland. So we'll talk about this tonight. Most of the Celt culture is divided in threes, three being a magical, godlike inspired number with a great power. It's three in the sense that is the physical world, the mental world, or the spirit world. But it's also the divisions of the Druids into three separate groups. It's also that a Druid, or someone who wants to follow the shamanic path, which is what it is for the Celts, is the Druids, has to follow three paths: the earth path, the sun path, and the moon path. Don't worry, I'll explain all of those tonight. And like the mystery schools of the Egyptian, the Chaldean, and the Greeks, the Druids evolve around the sun. So their main ideology and their main ideas and the whole culture and religious belief revolves around the sun and its movements. Most of their initiatic ceremonies took place on either one of the solstices, an important time of the year with specific energy that was embedding the initiates with extra strength to go through their trials. The goddess is also a figure of three. Mostly people would refer to it as the crone, the maiden, and the woman. It's also the past, the present, and the future. Everything in the culture, in the history, in the myths, in the stories being told by the bards, the tree is always, number three, is always represented in everything. It's not complete unless there's a third aspect to what you're trying to explain or trying to describe. So the tree is also the universe, as the earth, the heaven, and the underworld. Now, with the goddess, one of the main thing was that all bodies of water was associated with the female energy of the divinity. Large bodies of water, rivers, they were very important sites for ritual activity. The female mother goddess was the symbol of fertility, good fortune, unthing, protection, healing, and husbandry. So she played a very important role, but she always presented herself in trees. Now, she obviously had a male counterpart, and it's can be represented as the sun, could be represented as the sky, or the god of the forest, or the presence in the forest. So it often came as a stag or man with stag horns. Now, the place for worship for the Celts made it very easy to be worshiping, because the deities of the Celts were worshiped in open air. Air shrines or air open, so they would be maybe the stones that we know, but it's always an open sky. It could be also in the plain or in a clearing in the forests. The power of the gods resided in the elements of nature, the sun, the air, the fire, the water. And so much like the native cultures in South and North America, the power comes from nature itself, recognizing that there is something that is beyond us. Now, if you ever seen what a tsunami can do, you know that water can be destructive. But at the same time, if you've been in a place where the water has eroded for 1,000 years, like the Grand Canyon, you realize that sometimes the power of the water, even though it's soft, will erode away and make its own path, just like the River Amazon. It's the longest river. Why? Because it keeps twisting and turning and coming back onto itself. And so the practice through the Celts was observance of nature. And through observation, they could see and appreciate and respect all these powerful forces like the wind or the fire. In Ireland, the places that are said to be magical or to still hold the power, the most power, where the most worship would take place, would be the Isle of Arran, which in common mythology would be Avalon, the Isle of the Sacred Tree or the Apple Tree. It would also be Tara, the place of the High Kings. And then for the other one, it's Emhain, Maca, Cruachan, Dun Hyungus, Dun Halin, which are mountains and areas, and there's also the Boyne Valley. Those areas were recognized as having very strong energy, and so this is where people would gather to celebrate at the 8th time of the year for celebrations. However, that being said, There's also specific areas in Ireland that are said to be the door between this world and the other world. Now, this other world is one of those doors, is to lead to the Tuatha Dé Nann, but also helps you to navigate different dimensions. These doors are located at places that are like between the day and the night. It's always an in-between place. So if you're worshipping by the water, it won't be in the water, it won't be on the firm ground, it'll be on this place, on the beach, where it's wet, and yet it's not the water just yet. It's the in-between, between the firm ground and the actual water. So many of those places have a special energy about them, and at specific times of the year are known to be an open door to the other side, or to the other world. Now, this is Islay, Rathlin, the Isle of Man, but also Anglesey, Glastonbury. And I've been to Glastonbury, and I can assure you, if you're in the right place at the right time, you will see things that are not of this world, but yet still exist in this other dimension. And if you're there at the right time of the year, at the right time of the day, you can walk between those places and be part of the two worlds. So is Avebury. Avebury is the less well-known stone circles of England. I've been there, and I've heard some testimonies of people being there and going through by the impressions that they gave me, the stories they shared with me, and what I personally went through there. It was quite magical. There's also Stonehenge, Chartres, which is in France, and Karnak. So not all of the places associated with the Celt are necessarily in Ireland. Now, the art was also in often representing the Trinity form. The tree kind of swirls, the circles creating the tree shapes that look like a tree flower petal, and the eternal knot. The eternal knot is quite complicated. A real eternal knot, the round one, is the perfect expression of the boundlessness of God and the infinite diversity of creation. To make one of these, you have to be quite an expert or follow an actual pattern. They're quite complicated. All of their art, which is what made it so recognizable, so special, and that's why, even though it was found in Turkey and other places around the world, they can be identified and traced back to the Celts. It's this geometric forms and all these eternal knots that are either in the manuscript or in the fabric or in even the metalwork that they were selling or trading. The art, it was a way for them to pass information. As much as it was done through music and poems and stories through the bards, it was also very symbolic. And so each and every little detail, the color picked in the drawings in the books, are telling more of the different aspects, or enriching the text that it's actually trying to illustrate. So if you ever have a chance to actually have a good look at the art and going and explore the meaning behind all the details that they put into their work, you will realize just how dedicated they were to the different forms of communication that they had established. The Celts were known for their love of metaphor. A metaphor is a figure of speech, or speaking of something when actually referring to something else. And we'll have one of those examples tonight, where black doesn't mean necessarily the color black. When you're reading the stories, the mythology, you have to, yes, there's an imagery that comes with it. It's very clear. They're on the boat, this and that. But the black means the hidden, the inner knowledge, the mysteries, right? So every single detail of the story makes it easier to recount because it's part of a story. It's entertaining for those who are just listening in, but for the initiates who had been instructed in the meaning of the color black, of a serpent, of the different items in the story, then they could understand the deeper meaning hidden behind it. And so the Celts were very had developed a way to transmit information that was encoded with information that only the initiates would know what they were saying, and left other people quite entertained with the stories and the songs. It's also the one thing the Celts were known for was conundrum. And that was by posing, confusing a very difficult problem to question. So by posing these questions, the idea was to make you reflect before answering. If the question was easy, you would just throw your answer. The Druids had formed colleges to teach people from all over the Europe and England and Ireland and Scotland. And students were coming there to learn philosophy, to learn how to debate and to learn wisdom. So they were no fools. They were quite well learned. So even though they chose not to write anything down, doesn't mean that they were stupid or unintelligent or barbaric by any means. Now, the interesting part, as the shamanic part interests us, is the afterlife of the Celts. The life and the afterlife for the Celts were in different world that could be visited through those specific doors, facilitated at specific times of the year. Death was viewed more as a journey of the soul to another realm, a continuing of something rather than an ending. So the Celts believe in reincarnation, but they also believe that free will remained with the soul. And so therefore, if the soul lost its physical envelope and continued its journey to another realm, it could choose to be reincarnated, to not be reincarnated, or to stop existing altogether. So the free will was never lost. The free will belongs to the soul and not the physical body. Now, when is it that those doors become really easy to cross? Well, it's first May 1st on the Beltane celebration and November 1st on the Samhain, where the soul can easily travel from one world to the next. Now, this is a common trend found all over the world, especially in South America when they do the Day of the Dead's fiesta, which is held on November 1st, where all the families are holding a feast for their members of their family that have passed away, because they can cross over into this world and come and share the fiesta with us. In the same way, Samhain was developed for recognizing that this time of the year was the crossing time. So as much as the souls or other beings from the other world, and notice I'm saying other world and not underworld, is passing by, then it's also feasible for us to cross to the other side. And although we speak of souls as a point of death when you're transversing, the doors are so thin that a human being and their body can cross over to the other world. And there comes all the legends of humans being trapped in fairy land, or having danced with the fairies, come out of the fairy circle, and 30 years has elapsed or time has gone by. These magical doors exist all over Ireland, and especially if you cross either at dawn or at dusk, you have more chance to make it to the other side. You just need to know where to stand. One of those sensitive spots are ancient burial sites, which will be round and kind of hilly-like, known also as the fairy mounds, because they transport you to the other world. Know that while we're live, if you have any questions, you can ask your questions and I'll try to answer them as I go along. but I'm not saying hello to all of you individually. Now, this other world connection, the Celt belief in working hand in hand with this other world, which was one of the practices. Now, remember, the Druids, we'll see what the Druids are doing. They have different roles. The White Druids, his job was to help the religious and faith of the regular people. But in doing so, the regular people were more than capable at that time to work with the other world. It wasn't unheard of. You didn't have to be a Druid for that. Some people had more abilities or sensibility to sensing these energies, these portals, and this ability to communicate. And they would receive messages, warning, or guidance, either from the Sid or from angels or past loved ones. The other world in the Celtic tradition is very interesting because you get rewarded for the way that you have been acting. So therefore, if you led an honest life and you're in a perilous situation, the beings from the other worlds will come and protect you and guide you out of trouble or instruct you what to do to stay safe in difficult situation. However, if you have led a dishonest life, if you've been lying or if you've been badly treating other people, they would lead you to your punishment as well. So working with the other world was not recommended for anybody. And you have to be very strong in the sense, not physical so much as more as mentally, ethically, in your words, your actions, because they know everything on the other side. The Sid are known to not be able to lie. And so the reason for that is when you get to the other dimensions, you're losing your ability to be so thick. And so you become more transparent. And as you become more transparent, lies become obvious. If you're hiding something, that it's a lie or not. If a lie by omission is a lie for them. So unless you're completely ready to be truthful and take responsibility for everything that you have done and who you are, it wasn't recommended to travel to the other world. Now, the other world can be taken also by sea voyage. Now, a different dimension that is passed through while you're on the water that leads you to some of the islands that are surrounding Ireland. There's, interestingly enough, some stories about some island appearing and disappearing. Now, some people nowadays, they just toss it to, oh, it was covered in mist and then it just reappeared. But I would like to think that it's more of, it's still an island, but as it appears and disappears, you are shifting from one dimension to the next, and therefore there's your door to access these islands in another world format or a different dimension. All dimensions are coexisting one on top of another, but they don't clash because they don't have the same frequency. So where my house stands in a different dimension, there could be a temple made of crystal. And in another dimension, things are made out of light. So light can still exist. And in that dimension, appears to be as solid as it can be in that dimension. So at sea, the smaller islands like Isle of Man and the surrounding isles of Bristol, the channel, are known to be some of those islands that you can access and that you can go to. However, entering the other world, as for some of you, it's going to say, well, that's not easy. No, there's very specific times of the day, evenings, specific days of the year. There's all that to be considered. But there's also the fact that should you happen to cross into the other world, they are ruled by laws. And those laws are very specific. And if you don't know what you're doing, it could get you in trouble. There's the records of a witness from the 1600s that was taken down in the book of the stories of the dead that describes a sunless realm, which means there's light, but they can't see the sun, and which the inhabitant never lie and only ate saffron and milk. The witness tried to steal a gold cup and for that was expelled and forbidden to ever re-enter. And so he was never able to find the door after that. But that's not the only story that exists in Ireland's lore, that men or women were found to enter fairy circles and be transported to another world where it was more beautiful, it was always flowery, and there was plenty of food and music and dance. And some of them came out with what they thought would have been a day or a year, and they came back and only 5 minutes had elapsed. Or for some, they feel they'd only been there for a day, and then 30 years or 50 years would have had passed. Why is that? Because there's no notion of time on the other side. And so depending on when you're stepping back through, you technically have the ability to step back at the right moment where you left off. So a second later. But unless your intent is to reappear at a very specific time, you just will appear where your intent is to be appearing. If your worry is about being gone for too long, then the intent will be that too long of a time will have elapsed when you return. This leads us to the Book of the Dead, because these places can be entered in a human form, but these are the places where the soul will travel after it's died, and the physical body has died. And the Celts, just like the Egyptians and the Tibetans, have a collection of stories to read to the dead while they're at their wake, to guide their soul into the afterlife or through the other world, to either the land of youth, the land of promise, the land of under the waves, or the pleasant plains. So in all these books of the dead, you usually will have a reader that will sit by the body and read into the ear of the person, guiding their soul into this journey of meeting these different doors or traversing, having a chance to get on the boat, and letting them know, if you get on this boat, this is what's on the other side, and letting the soul, because they have free will, decide if yes or no, they'll embark on this particular journey. The compilation of these stories is contained in the Imarama and is described several people's journeys to these islands and what was discovered there. So I guess it's one way to entertain the people in the room, but it's also a way to reassure and to guide the soul of the dead loved one into a safe place, into a nice place. One of the things that I think all shamanic culture, we will realize that suicide is something that is frowned upon. In the Celtic tradition, to die was normal. To die in battle was fine. To die of old age was fine. However, because for them, death was not the end. So it was just a continuing another door in a different way. However, to someone to take their own life was considered an attempt to escape the trials and suffering of this world, which is considered the rejection of vital and important part of learning experience that your soul came to learn at this point in time. And also, by removing yourself from the equation of this life, you were there not just for yourself, but you were there for other people around you. All karma being balanced and all soul contracts being balanced, by removing yourself, you're now impeding the growth and the ability for others to learn what they came here to learn, because you're no longer there as part of the equation. The Celts believe that nothing is insurmountable, that through every pain, through every difficulty, there is the strength inside of you to overcome it, to find the faith, to find your own strength. This is really, really important, because if you're going through a difficult time right now and you're wondering, why me? Well, the reason is that there is something in it for you to learn. But it's not, the bigger the problem or the bigger the impact, it usually means that the bigger the effect, meaning that what you're going through is also going to affect and influence the other people around you going through it as well. So no matter what it is, it is balanced. So the weight that you decide to carry in this lifetime through your suffering and your pain is part of the contract that you decided to take on in order for the soul to grow, but not just yours. And sometimes we will do that for our loved ones, right? I remember when my son was about 6 days old and needed an operation for his hernia and his testicle. And it was just this tiny little thing. And I looked at the doctor and very earnestly said, fine, I'll get the operation for him. And I guess I'm not the only parent to say one of those things, because he didn't laugh. He didn't make fun of me. He didn't have to explain that it can't be done. But in that moment, he understood my pain and the fact that I could feel my son's pain. And I wanted to take my son's pain away from him. However, I on my own said, right, I know we can't do that. And so then he was great, because he gave me the chance to realize it on my own and didn't make fun of me. So I imagine this happens more than we think, to be willing to take on for her loved ones the weight that they're carrying and their suffering, so that it can at the very least be shared. So when you're in a position of despair, try, instead of thinking that you are alone, try to see who is it that is surrounding you. Who is it that is there for you? And at the very least, know that God is. And maybe that is why you're going through this dark night of the soul, is to finally realize that God is there with you and that you can pray for his help and assistance. The same thing as the suicide, the Celts had a very strong views on drugs. Nowhere in the teachings of the Druids was there any use of drugs to enhance anyone's ability. Drugs are considered a crutch, and overindulgence of alcohol or for recreative purposes is also an hindrance to developing your ability to trust your intuition and become aware of coincidence, signs, and revelations given to you. And so, although they celebrate life, they sing, they dance, they laugh, and they're merry, and they may drink alcohol at the festivals, contrary to what might be thought, they don't drink to the point of inebriety. They'll just drink in a celebration and that'll be it. So it'll be no more different than to drink one glass of juice or a glass of water, right? It will be part of saluting and celebrating, but that's where it ends. A very different way of the way we see the world today and the way we abuse alcohol in this day and age. Now, the Tree of Life. The Tree of Life is an important symbol in the Celt culture, as it represents the idea of death, rebirth, and regrowth. Now, why do we start with death? Because the New Year's for the Celt starts on November 1st, which is death, right? Everything in the fall seems to die. And this is one of the metaphors that the Celts are using to teach us about the soul. It seems that the tree is dead, and yet it is reborn in the spring and grows the entire summer. And that's just how they explain to their initiates and the people that your soul, although looks dead, continues and it's reborn and continues to grow lifetime after lifetime. The Celt religious ideas and shamanism foundation is based on nature. It's all about the observance of what the world is made of. And so if the rest of the world is made this way, so are we. And this is where we find all the links between nature, shamanism, and the Celts. It's based on the rhythm of these moments of rest, these moments of growth, these moments of sunlight, these moments of darkness. So the darkness not being so much like the Dark Ages, but very, very thoroughly the fact that, you know, as we've witnessed now, it's the fall, the days are shortening, and pretty much nighttime comes at 7 instead of 10 o'clock in the summer, right? So it's this darkness that encourages us to rest, to sleep, to regroup, and to work on different things. And it's also a time for the Druids to go into a time of introspection, isolation, and meditation. So each time of the year had their own function, and regulated through the body, the food that we eat, and the actions that we do. The Celts' life is webbed with the current of nature, of this cycle of the flow of the river, the flow of the tides. So linked into all of that, what was beautiful was that the Celtic people would, because they worship in nature, be in a constant state of prayer, a state of intent of gratefulness. They, although have a past and a future, the Celts live in the present moment. So they don't worry and they don't live in the past. The past is done. Now, because of the decisions you made in the past, you may face consequences that is today, and that's your fate. However, you have the power in the here and now to change your destiny, your future. But only by staying in the here and the now and making decisions regarding the present moment.
The idea of living in the now is that you live in true harmony, and you also develop the sense of unity or the interrelationship or interdependence you have with the world that surrounds you. That is one of the things that we kind of lose living in the city or living in this more modern world, is that the harvest was good or bad. The only affects us that the price of vegetables is going to go up at the supermarket, but you're still going to get your vegetables. You're still going to get everything that you need. You don't have that sense that, oh, this is time for apple. This is time for carrots. This is time for blueberries and raspberries. To be more in sync with this world and being interdependent in this relationship to nature is understanding that there are times of the year where you'd celebrate raspberries because they're only available for a short time, and then it would be blueberries, and then it would be something else. And as you enjoy the food in the moment, you enjoy the harvest of the moment, you had this gratitude towards Mother Earth for fulfilling you and for continuously feeding you and as well as protecting you. Now, the view of God as a creator for the Celts, the creator was God, was revered as an artist. And they recognized that everything was a piece of art and it had deep meaning, from a clove to a flower to an animal. Everything had a special touch that was done by the creator. So nothing was mundane and everything was equal. So in the Celtic culture, women and men were equal, but also you would treat your animals with the same amount of respect that you would treat the children. Everything was sparked with a divine inside of it. And so there was reverence for everything, even trees. So there wouldn't be wastes of killing trees just for the sake of having a bigger yard. If a tree was put down, it was done so with reverence and with great thanks that the wood would be used for either furniture or a house or something else. Through this observance and this way of life, the imagination and observation was the key to discovering the more deep hidden meanings. And that's when you start observing sacred geometry in a spider's web, or that you start seeing in through the shells, the golden ratio and things like that. So a lot of time was spent back then having the ability to sit on a bale of hay and enjoying the moment. When do we do that now? We rush always from one place to the next, never actually taking the time of observing the world that surrounds us. And so that led the Celts to believe that in their stories, people had the ability to shape shift. Now, that's what the story is. If you remember the story of Arthur from Disney, him and Merlin change into fish and into birds and they fly all over the place. This is one of the stories about metamorphosis. That the goddess could be a hag or could be a young maiden in the stories is teaching us that divine inside of everyone. You see, using the stories to say you don't know who you're going to meet, that it's an old, ugly, deformed lady or a young lady. There's a divine spark inside, and that's why they should be treated with loving compassion. The external beauty was not what would should guide your action. It was with it, is it in behind the physical body that is what you need to recognize and to see. The deeper meaning of shape-shifting as well is that it represents that through our deeds, through our actions or words, through the promises that we keep or do not keep, we are either flying as high as birds or as low as mice and pigs. So in a way, we are transforming into a better person or a worse person. And we're continuously changing as we begin to righteously act or as we change and become vengeful or angry and bitter. Which leads us to, how can we stay on the right path? The paths were explained as three paths. Now remember, everything goes by three. So one of the paths was the earth path. The earth path is the actual challenge of living this way, right? So it's an everyday commitment. This path is about living a balanced life with nature, a healthy diet, and the lowest impact on nature as we can. How does that translate in 2021? It translates that we use as little energy as we can. We reduce our consumption. We find ways to use less electricity or less gas, either by biking, walking, or using public transports, but also not to waste and to compost, to recycle, to reuse. All of those things are the earth path. It's a very green way of living. It involves also having to spend time in nature. And that a lot of people may be, you know, out of concern for the earth and the fact that we're running out of certain fuels and wasting away. People are becoming more aware, right? So we have better light bulbs. We have shower heads that are using a third of the water that a normal shower would use. And we're slowly adapting to better windows to preserve the heat and spend less while heating our house. But it's also about spending time in nature. The first part is about stillness. So being able to find a spot. And it doesn't matter if it's a park in the middle of the city or if you're able to get away into nature. And it doesn't matter if it's by the ocean, by a mountain, by a lake, by a river, in the middle of a forest. It's to have the ability to be still. Because when you're still, that's when the birds start singing. That's when the squirrels runs in front of you. That's when interesting things happen. And that's when you can finally focus your observation and see how does nature really work when you are not creating chaos and noise and disturbing them. The study of all of its implication is part of the earth path, as well as helping restore the planet by planting trees, gardens, flowers, helping it recover, becoming more green from all the modern day pollution and abuse that we've imposed on poor Mother Earth. The second path is the path of the sun. The three paths are walked together. You'll see they're quite different paths, but they're not individual or separate. They're just different actions. The sun path is about following the sun. And so celebrating the eight sections or celebration festivals in the Celt culture. So acknowledging this important time of the year, these times of change, the change of energy, the change in the light, and recognizing that for each of these times of period, certain actions are more appropriate than others. Obviously, you won't be planting in the fall, you'll plant in the springs. And those festivals mark the changes in nature. And to live in balance with nature is to understand its rhythm, and celebrating its rhythm is the sun path. The rituals and the festivals are dividing the year in eight dates. So we talked about Samhain on November 1st and February 1st as well, is the Imbolc, and August 1st is the Feast of Lug, and we have the Beltane on May 1st. But we also have the solstice and the equinox, which are the eight times of the year where the earth shifts, the life changes, and creates opportunities for different activities. The last path is the moon path. The moon path is more of this, represents the silent internal path. That's what the moon is about. The sun is in a bright daylight. It's about the celebration. The moon is about the inward. So remember when I said the color black is about the inner mysteries, the moon is the light in the darkness. So it's about finding our own light, finding our own spark of divine inside of us, either through meditation, introspection, but also spending time alone in isolation or hermitage or pilgrimage. This practice of meditation enables the druids and anybody who's doing the practice to seek information about the past or the future in this current life or past life or future lives through traveling through the different dimensions. But the main idea was that this introspection is about knowing yourself, and therefore becomes a tool for growth, wisdom, and inner peace. As inside, as outside. So if you find inner peace, peace will resonate around you and then become this peace that is part of your community or your family at first, but eventually with enough peace in the family becomes part of the community. It grows like ripples in a pond. It affects more than just where the stone falls. It affects the entire pond. The Druids were known for their gifts of wisdom, medicine, and the ability to understand nature. And so the artifacts were found near Switzerland and in Turkey, along with art that identifies it as Celtic, right? So that's how we know they were made for the Celts and by the Celts and used by them. But some of the tools were so fine that they actually closely resemble the actual tools being used today to conduct surgeries, which means that their knowledge of the physical body and healing and understanding like blows to the head and things like that, a lot of skulls were found with holes in their heads, and then that they lived, they didn't die from the hole. They lived long enough for growth to close the hole. So you're able to see the new growths of the bones. So they live quite some time after the operation, which indicates that through the medicinal abilities of the Druids to cure common illness, they also had developed strong anesthetics and antiseptics, allowing people to prevent infections and pain for undergoing these deep surgeries. Now, the initiative rites of the Druids closely resembles the Greek and mystery in Egyptian mystery school. Now, we know from the beginning of the podcast that the original invaders came from Greece and from Egypt, or passing through their travels through Egypt, eventually made it to Ireland. So it's not surprising that the rites of initiation would come from that far back. One of the qualities to become a Druid, so everybody could practice, everybody could learn. It wasn't reserved for the particular caste. Since everyone was equal, everybody had a chance. However, to become a Druid, you needed to possess an incredible memory to retain all the teaching, the laws, the precedents, the medical knowledge. And one could dedicate up to 20 years memorizing through the oral teaching what was known at the time. The Druids came in three classes. And again, they're more about what they were doing more than saying one was better than the other. But the Ophate were the apprentice. And so they were starting out, they would be dressed in green. But before even entering into becoming or wanting to be a Druid, they had to be initiated and have knowledge of medicine and astronomy already. And those with experience in poetry and music were a plus. So they already had the knowledge of plants and healing properties of different minerals and different foods before even entering. So this is important because people think that only the Druids would have known this, but everybody could know this. When you would call on a Druid is because something more serious would be taking place. And that's why you would require their more specific knowledge or, perhaps certain plants weren't available to the certain people. So they would call into a Druid who would have the reserves of these herbs to be able to do the mixture or the tincture that was required. Now, the second class of Druids is called Dorwid. He's the superior instructor, so he's no longer an apprentice in the green robes. He can wear the white robes. He was the lawyer, the judge, the religious teacher. He would have the gift of prophecy and divination. They would often be, and this is one of the reasons, because it took so long to train the initiates, they wasn't that many. And usually an apprentice, a novate, would follow a Druid around until they learned everything that needed to be learned. So they would travel together over the countryside and learn and teach as they were traveling together. Now, they were wearing the white robes, and the Ovid would shave their heads, but the Druids eventually were allowed to grow their beards. But they would be the ones celebrating all the ceremonies of the Sun Paths and performing all the rituals to inaugurate a new king or even a marriage. They were in charge of the ceremonies. Now the Bard, what we now called the Bards, were the teacher of wisdom. They were sky blue robes. They were the foundation of the Celt culture. They were the teachers through the myths and the legends, and they were teaching people proper respect of everyone and everything. All things and all humans being equal, deserving the same treatment, and learning through the history, through the songs, through everything that was shared by them. There was two qualities of stories, and not all bards were allowed to sing all songs. So you had to be tested and approved for the lesser history part. And then you had to memorize the 20,000 lines of poetry for the higher knowledge. And only once were you approved, were you able to sing and teach from these poems and this poetry and these singing and these mythologies. So the propagation of these stories and the exchange, the cultural exchange that took place, were very regimented. So it's not everybody that just pick up a guitar and start singing. Right? It had to be very specific people that were approved. Now, out of all these qualities of druids, there was what is referred to an archdruid. An archdruid is someone that would be voted in for a certain period of time to oversee a certain region of druids, mainly the education in the colleges and the enrollment of students and the initiation and all those things. There were six different degrees of archdruids, which were denoted by different color of the sash they were wearing. An archdruid would have a golden scepter with which they would cut the mistletoe, known to have several medicinal qualities, and they would often have an oak crown around their heads. Their education system, although oral only, was so renowned that people from all over Europe, and we're talking about kings, queens, court people, would come, young men, would come to study the philosophy from the colleges. The archdruids, all those outside of doing all those things, would spend a lot of time in prayers and meditation. Now, we spoke about the golden scepter that the archdruid used. All the other druids would have what's called the lesser tools. Those tools are mostly used for when you're trying to do ceremonies, so the sun paths, but also when you're trying to do divination or contacting the other world. The tools are representations of what is not seen. So there's the stone, which represents the world. The knife is the ability to yield energy. The cup is the sharing with the common good. And the wand is to representing your power or focusing your energy or your will on a certain wish or a certain intention. And as someone evolves in their skills and their knowledge, they would be granted higher tools. The stone became a shield, the knife became a spear, the cup became a cauldron, and the wand became a sword. Again, they were representing the same idea. So as you have more power and as you have more knowledge and more wisdom, you go from sharing from a cup to sharing from a cauldron, right? So everything represented the vastness of what you had to offer and what you had to share. This connects us with the native tradition, where in the native tradition, you have to surrender your tools, your war tools, at the cardinal points, the arrow, the tomahawk, the spear, and the knife, in order to obtain superior tools for peace that are given to you by your guides, a talking stick, a bowl, a rattle, and a song, which are the equivalents of the druid tools. You surrender your lesser tools to obtain the higher tools. This leads us to, how do we embark on these paths, on these journeys? All Celt druids and apprentices would undergo actual physical journeys traveling from villages to villages over a certain region, which would, they would cover. Much like you would think in the early time of the settlers, where a doctor would have to do his rounds from town to town because there wasn't a doctor available everywhere. But it was also, under the guise of this physical journey, an opportunity for growth, transformation, and evolution, seeing different people, seeing different situations, and being able to gain wisdom from how these things were dealt in a wise way by the Master Druid, who was your instructor. The original plan is that the Ovate will experience the death of the ego. The ego being everything that is attached to the material world, such as money, fear, lust and desire, competition, individualistic people or selfish people. You need the death of the ego in order to be resurrected, having abandoned these ways and living a simpler life, a life of gratitude, of love and of compassion. So the journey wasn't just physical. It requires us to know ourselves and to look at our roots. Meaning, what are we made of? What are the components that are creating us, that are part of us? And through these experiences is a part of how it's shaping us. A lot like the water is shaping the rock. Eventually, the different experiences that we collect together is also shaping our interior, our ideals, our belief, and the way we think and the way we act. For example, if a girl is raped, it can become an eternal victim. She can say that she can be afraid of everything and stop moving forward. Or a girl can be raped, but try to gain from that experience, learn to protect herself, learn to defend herself, speak up against these actions that were taken against her, ask for law to be rectified to protect her, and as well inform and protect other people from becoming victims of the same actions. So this same experience has shaped the two women very, very differently. The idea is that on the journey through oneself, it's to travel from the beginning and identify each of these experiences that and choose to transform yourself from the eternal victim into more than a survivor, an enlightened person, and a person living in the light of these experiences, having grown and being different. The aim is to strip yourself bare and really examining and not so much judging ourselves, but more about understanding who we are and how can we do better. It also means that sometimes we do need to travel alone in that journey, that inward journey, and it's okay to ask for guidance, which is why the Ovate was always accompanied by a master teacher. Although some experiences had to be experienced alone. And if you want to know more about that, please watch the podcast on the Druids. But the idea is that coming out of that experience, the teacher was always there. The guide was always there to bring them back and say, okay, so this is what you live now. What can we make of that? How can you grow from that experience? When I did the Camino Frances, it was very interesting because we left with a book and we decided each day to work on a different emotional theme to cleanse our soul from the garbage we had accumulated over the past few years. So me and my small group would work on that every day. And as we were chatting at the albergues about our experience of the day, I've had several pilgrims come to me and they say they were feeling quite lost. They'd been walking for a few days with no direction. And you have to understand, it's not the sense of direction they didn't know how to get from the one town to the next town. That they could find out really nicely. But while they were walking, and these walks are 6-7 hours long, they didn't know what they were doing. They were completely lost. They felt the call to come to the Camino. They felt the call to walk 800 kilometers, but they didn't know what to do with that time and that space that would they were offering themselves. They were giving themselves all this time, but they just didn't know what to do with it. So they would come to me and then I would you know, tell them. There's no right way or wrong way. Some people are doing it because they want to come back and claim they did it. Some people come because they feel very lost. They just got divorced, or they just lost someone dear to them, and they feel this emptiness, and they're being called to do this walk. And so a guide is not someone that's necessarily going to tell you what to do, but it's somebody that can guide you and give you some idea of the things you may try. But in the end, the Celt's way is to find your own way. So through research, through questioning, through exploration, is to find what is right for you. One of the stories that explains that journeying is done through the story of the Crystal Palace, which is one of the mythology that has been thought by the bards through eons. Because Avon is not necessarily just a place that is not of this world. It's more about being in heaven while you are having your earthly experience, most like the saints and the sage. And so it's symbolically represented in the story of the Crystal Palace. It's about a spiritual quest, about a young man trying to visit their sister who married the sun god. So the sun god is the divine, and the sister is the feminine aspect that is married with the divine. And the young men that are going on these spiritual quests to find the sister is basically, and eventually the place, the palace of the sun god, is basically to find your higher self and to meet your higher self and to meet your divine. So the hero, his name is Yvon, and he's the seventh son. And all of his brothers have tried before him to get to the sun, the Crystal Palace, and they fail because they lacked determination. They are more worried about materialistic things, and so they eventually give up and return home. Yvon is described as someone as not so focused on the material world, and so because of that, not so much appreciated by the other brothers, but decides that for the sake of his sister, he will try and go and find her. In his pursuit, he has a very arduous journey all the way to the Crystal Palace, going through deep forests, going through desertic plains, and not understanding what all of these things are. But eventually, through the right actions, he manages to get to the Crystal Palace, where he meets his sister and visits with her, but disobeys the rule and gets sent back. What does that mean? Is that even though you are able to get to the very center of yourself, meet your higher self, there will come a time and a point where you might disengage from your activities, your spiritual activity, and in doing so, are withdrawn from the palace. Now, that doesn't mean, in the story, it does say, you may return, but at this point in time, you must leave. And so he will have to, unfortunately, redo the very arduous journey to return to the Crystal Palace, meaning he's going to have to shed himself of the death of the ego. He's going to have to rebuild his virtues in order to be able to be one with his higher self and stay inside the Crystal Palace. So the lesser mysteries is the death of the ego and the rebirth as a true man. And it's part of the initiation that I'll explain in a minute. But the greater mysteries is that we must unite with the divine union out of ourselves and of Creator inside of us, not at the exterior of us. And this is why the beauty of the Celts shamanism is that it doesn't require you to be part of a group. It doesn't require you to be in a certain place, having to have a certain building, because it's all done, can be all done by yourself through nature and through hard work and dedication. So you can actually get there. Now, I talked about how the guide is there to show you the way, but not walk the way for you, right? So in the same way that when I was doing the Camino, I was walking my own path. I was explaining what I was doing, and people were welcome to try what I was doing, but it didn't mean that it was the only way to get there. the way of the shamanism of the Celt was very limited because not everybody was ready for this kind of awakening and this kind of connection. But as James Redfield indicates in his book of the Celestine Prophecy, more and more people are now, in this day and age, awakening and feeling a need for their life to have this purpose and this meaning. So this is why I'm sharing a podcast with you, is to allow you through all of these different parts of shamanism culture that we will explore, that hopefully you can find one of those cultures that will resonate with you. And through those, you will be able to do on your own journey or accompanied with friends to be able to start your inner journey and connecting with your divine self. The Celtic traditions recognize that some people are more sensitive to sensing energies or seeing across the veil or communicating and receiving messages. But that's it. It doesn't mean that it's limiting. On the contrary, it means that everybody who can be trained can actually, with time, come to feel those energies, receive those messages. This is one of the reasons why I teach mediumship and why I teach about energy and I teach those classes for all of you to recognize that although I was born sensitive to all those things, all of you knowing how to walk this path can connect to those energies and receive those messages and be guided. The real ability lies in having a good intuition, which means listening to your intuition and recognizing the signs and the coincidence, because there's no coincidence, but synchronicities as they occur, because nothing happens for no reason. So even though you're preparing for this energy, even though you know that there's work to be done within you, you must prepare your physical body as much as your mental and your spiritual body. You have to take responsibility for the progress. So if some of you are complaining that you're not moving fast enough, in the Celtic tradition, the speed had no meaning. It was not important. If you were dedicated into doing the work, if you work assiduously, you would see the results. But there was also a time where there was a time for integration and not a time for continuously running forward and trying to do more and learn more. It was a time to sit back and go, what have I learned? How am I actually applying what I've learned to my everyday path? And I think that there's a lot of courses available out there. There's a lot of online things that you can do. People got really bored with COVID. They couldn't get out. And they figure, okay, well, I'll do this, I'll do that. But you can't just take class after class after class. There is a time, which is the observance of nature. When it's winter outside, things are supposed to calm down. You're supposed to then figure what is still good. That is actually the November 1st celebration of the Druids, is to realize, okay, what have I done so far that's not serving me? What am I leaving behind this year? And what am I going to start fresh with the new year? What is it that's actually purposeful? What do I need more of? What am I working on? Those are all important things. And those different kinds of times of the years are made for that period of either action or introspection. The way of the Celts is a way of the wisdom of nature. And so it's a very grounding experience. And it's surrounded by life. So it's absolutely a lovely, peaceful way to proceed into your spirituality. As it's open to absolutely everyone who wishes to follow it. It doesn't require to be Celt. It doesn't require to be of any nationality. The only requirement is that you are willing to follow the different paths and to apply it to your everyday life. So it doesn't have as many constraints. It just has guiding principle instead. It's all about coming into the world and realizing that we are all part of this world. We're all sharing this world. And as such, we're all the caretakers of this world. And we play an important role in the development of the nature around us and sustainability of the environment. Your soul is got the perfect strength and the perfect knowledge to allow you to embark on this journey to fulfilling your contract with the universe and contributing then to your community. And so don't underestimate the value that you have of this world. You're very, very important. And so this is maybe a hard time for you, but the Druid's way, the Celtic's way, is a way of falling back onto oneself and feeling connected, and feeling connected to nature, feeling connected to all the life around you. And from personal experience, this lifts despair, this lifts this hopelessness feeling, because you are surrounded by the life all around you. And so in a way imbues you with this life and gives you the energy to try one more time. This could be just the one more time you need to try to finally get out of it. Don't be afraid to ask for help if you need help, and to follow your heart. Your heart is the right way. Now, just to wrap things up tonight, I want to talk that in the old days of the Celts, there was 3 degrees of Druidic mysteries that the initiates had to go through in order to be able to become fully a Druid. The first degree was to build intellectual powers and control your animal nature. And it required you to be buried in the coffin. Now, this may seem horrible. However, it represented a symbolic death. So it's only a ritual that was there to make you realize that you had to go past and beyond your physical abilities into your mental ability. This may seem strange, yet it's a practice that was practiced by the Cathars in France, but also other mystery schools like the Freemasons, or cults and mystery, Egyptian mystery schools of Osiris, or also the Greek schools of Bacchus and Mithras. And so it was all about coming back to life as a newborn, having shed these fears of the material world. The second test was actually very, very hard to find because very few talk about it. But the second test was about the purity and intelligence overcoming a dark labyrinth. Inside this labyrinth, they were consistently met with opportunities for lust and passion and orgies. And they had to resist their carnal nature and pass through this labyrinth unscathed and pure, which led them to the third test. The third test is described as being put to sea on an open boat. However, if you do a lot of research, you will find that they were provided with a cape that was covered in astrological symbols and a constellation, which meant that the initiate had to be sent to sea and had to guide himself back with the stars. And so the idea was to prove your purity, your dedication, but at the same time that you had knowledge as well. So that was once those 3 stages of Druidic mystery initiatic practices were done, that the initiate would be born again and instructed in the secrets and the hidden truths behind those rituals and behind the meanings of the teachings of the song. So the deeper meaning of everything. So all of a sudden you had to relearn the meaning of everything you had memorized before to the deeper meaning, something that would only be shared with the initiates. If you are interested, and this is a path that might interest you, there's the Ancient Order of the Druids of America. They're easy to find online. And they've established different curriculums for the different degree. For your first degree, you must study the 3 paths, the Earth, Sun, and Moon path, and one of the spirals, they call, of being a Druid. So it could be either poetry, which requires you to memorize and write poetry, true music, which requires you to sing and play music, true divination, which requires you to do quite a few in the course of 1 year, healing. So you got to choose one of these, right? So you don't have to do them all, just one. Healing through either herbalism or a recognized healing modality like acupressure, acupuncture, or different healing hearts. Magic through rituals and summoning direct energies. Sacred geometry. So for those of you who like the very concrete things, sacred geometry is the drawing of the geometry, the determination of the symbols out of the circle and things like that. And the last one would be the Earth Mysteries, which is linked with different sites. Something that we do when we take the spiritual trips all over the world, we are connecting to the Earth's energies, and we're linking our experience with past experience and being guided with the energies that are there. So in my case, as a shaman, I use the music, I use the healing, I use the magic, I use the sacred geometry, and I work with the Earth Mysteries. I could, but I'm not interested in divination because I figure the future is not set. So living in the now is always being the best that you can be in the very very present moment will lead you to a future and a destiny that can only be good. So I'm not very curious about looking into the future. And although I did poetry a long time ago, I don't have the time. But you, after a year of work and a year of study, you are tested and then can be admitted into what is called an apprentice. And then it goes on to being a companion, an adept, and a druid olav, which means that you have studied all three branches of the types of druids you can be. You can be a druid, a bard, and a novate. So the healing hearts, the religious aspects of celebrations, and the bard, the singing, and the poetry. And so through all of this, you might find that this is a way for you to start working through your inner journey to connecting to your divine. And I hope that for some of you, this will be useful. We will explore next week, a totally different culture. Next week, we're doing the South America, Aztecs, Toltecs, Olmecs, and Maya Inca. And so we will explore how shamanism evolved to these different cultures that occupied the same space, and what are the teachings that are left for us that we can follow and be guided by. In conclusion, my friends, the Celts is a tradition of mystical tradition found in all over the world, right? So the Druids orders are all over the world now. It's not reserved to Ireland alone. So if you are an aspirant that is ready to pass through the transformative process, they will teach you to awaken those subtle hidden power within you and to connect with your strength, your abilities, and your gifts in order for your soul to actually soar into this world and bring more light, which is what we actually need. The Celts are known for this art and the science of causing the changes in consciousness in according to will. So it's a very mental practice. It's a practice based on your will. And if you're interested in reading more about it, I have some references for you. The Mammoth Book of Celtic Myths and Legends by Peter Beresford Ellis. The Magic of Celtic Otherworlds, by Steve Balmars, The Druidry and Book by John Michael Greer, The Secret Teaching of All Ages by Manly P. Hall, The Celts, Life, Myths, and Arts by Juliet Wood, Celtic Legends of the Beyond by Anatoly Labraz, The Celtic Way of Prayer by Esther DeWall, and The Celtic Mysteries by Tanis Halliwell. And of course, Iramura, the Voyage of the Afterlife, the Book of the Dead. The Book of the Dead is easily found if you type that in. There's different authors for that one. So that's it for me for tonight. I am glad that we could finally get to see each other again. And I'll see you next week.